Blocked and Metered with Jim Suhan. I'm Jim Suhan here with Brandon Morton. I'm going to get right into the first topic of the day, which is that, you know, I've been very lucky in my career. I've traveled around. We've got to see a lot of cool things. And the announcement that Mike Krzyzewski is going to step down as the Duke basketball coach after the next season brought to mind two moments that I had with Coach K. I'm sure he doesn't remember them, but I remember them. The first was preparing for Final Four coverage for, I guess, one of the Final Fours that came to the Metrodome. I can't remember which one it was. I went down to Carolina, and I made the tour, and I did some stories in North Carolina, went to Duke. And Mike Krzyzewski, you know, as big a figure as he is, was willing to sit down with me in this little ante room right by the court in Cameron Indoor Stadium. And we sat there for like 20 minutes and chatted. And, you know, I've heard tons of good things about Coach K. I've heard not so great things about Coach K is the way he treats people. I'll just tell you that the day I was there, he was great. Maybe he was looking forward to the day when he was going to recruit some top basketball talent out of Minnesota, whatever his motivation. He was really an interesting, introspective guy who just sat there, crossed his legs and chatted me up. So that was my first real experience with him other than a press conference situation. The other one was when Duke was in the Final Four, in the Metrodome, in the semifinals, they would go on to win the championship, and they were down by 20, 30 points to a good Maryland team. And my seat for that tournament, and this isn't really the way it works anymore, my seat for that tournament, I was about 3 feet behind Coach K's chair. So when he would turn and talk to his team during timeouts, it was one of the oddest things I've ever experienced. Krzyzewski would be yelling at or instructing his players, and just because of where I was aligned, he kept on making eye contact with me. It was the strangest, most awkward thing, because of course I wasn't going to turn away because I wanted to hear what he had to say. This is gold for a sports writer to get to sit within 2 feet of Mike Krzyzewski as he's instructing his team in a Final Four. I wasn't going to turn away, but every time I looked in the huddle, Krzyzewski would like glare back at me like, "What are you doing in my huddle, jerk? You know, get away from me." I will actually offer one more Krzyzewski memory before we get on to the rest of the show. And that was, and I'm hesitant to do this, but it is reality, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. Sid, because Sid Hartman was truly good friends with Bobby Knight. That wasn't just what Sid said. They really were good friends. When Bobby Knight came to town, they went to dinner. They were close. For whatever reason, they were close. So Sid, the way Sid thought, Sid was always talking about Mike Krzyzewski as Bobby Knight's protege. Now, this is at a point when Bobby Knight was, his star was on the wane. He was going to Texas Tech. He was out of coaching. And Mike Krzyzewski was considered by everybody to be the greatest coach in the world. And every time Mike would come to town for something, or every time Sid would talk about him, he'd talk about him like he was still a kid who was shining Bobby Knight's shoes. So we're at a press conference before one of these Final Fours, and Krzyzewski's up at the podium, and Sid is like talking to him like they're best friends. And Krzyzewski's like giving him this glare, right? A real glare. Krzyzewski gets off the podium. Sid rushes over, starts talking about Bobby Knight, and Krzyzewski ducked between two security guards into like a no media area and told the security guards, "Do not let this man follow me." So that was one of my favorite combo Sid Mike Krzyzewski stories. I just thought I'd offer those remembrances. Let's get to the rest of the show here. This is a fairly new show. The format is I'm going to talk about a few things. We're going to get to the 2-minute drill. I'm going to hit you with a bunch of topics in rapid fire, and then I'm going to have a guest on in the second half of the show. Last week, my guest was LaTroy Hawkins. Remarkable interview. He really opened up about a lot of things, his career, how close he came to quitting baseball. Great stuff from LaTroy. This week, it's Kevin Seifert, my old colleague at the Minneapolis Star Tribune, now kind of a hot shot for ESPN. And he offers some real interesting insights into Aaron Rodgers' mindset, and offers a possibility about Aaron Rodgers' future that I really hadn't contemplated a whole lot. So stick around for that. And that segment's called 10 Minutes or More with Somebody I Don't Hate. But for now, with Brandon Morton, let's get to 2-Minute Drill. Reminder, this is part of TalkNorth.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see all the shows as they're released. Best way to listen to this show or the network, subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It is free. Also, check out the rest of the network, Cheryl Reeve, John Millay, Jeff Diamond, John Krasinski, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta. We have so many people on the network now, I can't even remember them all. We also have tons of outdoor content. And of course, Brandon Morton is the producer who holds it all together. And if you would like to advertise with this show or the network, reach Karen Cleary at KCLEARY @talknorth.com. All right, let's do the 2-minute drill.
All right, let's start the 2-minute drill off with twin killing.
So when a team struggles, what fans and sports writers, sports media, what we all do is we try to isolate the problem and fix the problem, at least in our own minds, at least so we can have some fun second guessing. I believe we've reached the point in this twin season where analysis no longer matters. They are so beat up and they are so buried in the standings that there's no one move that's going to fix anything. This feels like a lost season. And if it's not a lost season, they're not going to come back because they make one move. They're going to need to get about 8 people healthy. They're going to need to get 10 people hot at the same time. They're going to need some long winning streaks. All that is possible, but unlikely. I will say this. I've been paying attention to baseball since the 60s. That's how old I am. I have been writing professionally about baseball since 1993. I have covered a lot of bad teams. I've covered some really good teams, but I've covered a lot of bad teams. I've seen bad pitching stats before. It does happen. I've seen teams where just nobody has a good year. I've never seen this level of devastation physically. I've never seen this many key players hurt simultaneously. I've never seen a position completely wiped out like center field. They went into the season thinking Byron Buxton was going to play 80-90% of the games in center field and Jake Cave was going to play the rest. And maybe Max Kepler, if Buxton's out for a long time, maybe Max Kepler will contribute a little bit center field. They are about to play their 7th different center fielder, and two or three of those center fielders had never played center field before. There is a level of injury you can't bounce back from, and I'm sad to say I think the Twins have reached that point.
Not much in it for the fans besides cheap tickets, as it appears.
You know what? I will say this, and I learned this when I was living in Texas. I was making about $6 an hour, then I got a big raise to $10 an hour. And I was living walking distance from Arlington Stadium. And the Rangers kind of stunk, but the ability to walk over to the ballpark and see a big league game without having to plan it out and without having to spend a lot of money on tickets, there is something cool. If you can put aside bad baseball, if you can let that not turn your stomach, getting to go to Target Field for a reasonable price on a beautiful summer day or summer evening is still a cool thing to do. You just might have to watch some bad baseball while you're there.
That's what the beer is for. All right,
exactly.
On to the next topic, fanning the flames.
I'm probably going to overreach here, warning, but we are seeing fan behavior that is stupid and disgusting. And we've always seen a little bit of that. There's always been the one that makes the highlights, right? Once a week, some idiot will run under a field or do something to get themselves in trouble. We are seeing I won't use the word pandemic. We are seeing an outbreak, though, of stupid, irresponsible, and sometimes dangerous fan behavior. And you know what? If you look at what's happening in our society, it just doesn't surprise me much. We had people storm the U.S. Capitol waving Confederate flags, yes, Trump flags, but also Confederate flags. So it doesn't surprise me when a white fan in Boston throws a full water bottle at Kyrie Irving that really could have hurt the guy or hurt somebody nearby him. So this guy's rationale is Kyrie Irving called my city racist, therefore I, a white person, am going to do something racist against him. You're not helping, dude. You're really not helping. We are just seeing so many. And there was a veteran was talking on Memorial Day, and he started veering off and talking about racism in our country, and they cut his mic. We are just seeing so much of this behavior. Also, I think it ties in with the whole anti-vax movement. We have a certain segment of the population. I used to think it was like 5%. Now we know it's like more like 35%, 40% of people who think you can just create your own reality, not believe in vaccines, not believe that the virus is real, believe that you can overthrow an election by carrying a flag through the state capitol and not eventually get arrested and jailed for that. It's all the same thing, and it scares the hell out of me.
The same people that made a fit and tearing down racks at Targets full of masks.
Exactly. That's exactly the mentality. They're very different worlds, but I think they're the same people.
Next topic, Osaka.
So Naomi Osaka decided not to do interviews at the French Open. She notified the tournament 4 days before she went. She said it was because she's dealt with some anxiety, some depression, some other issues. She finds it very difficult to come off an emotional match and sit down and answer questions. And I there have been some really good, thoughtful pieces written about this, but there have also been kind of whack job pieces on both ends, and I want to address both ends. All right. Just because Naomi Osaka doesn't want to do interviews doesn't mean there shouldn't be any more interviews, doesn't mean there shouldn't be any more press conferences, doesn't mean that journalists are bad, doesn't mean that because some of the questions that get asked sound like stupid questions that there shouldn't be any questions. Every league wants there to be media coverage of their stars and their games. They want that. A lot of players want that coverage. They might not like a certain reporter or a certain question, but they do want everything that comes with publicity, which is more money for the league, therefore more money for the athletes, more visibility, more market share. So let's not pretend that there shouldn't be any interviews just because a lot of the questions are dumb. And you know what? I cringe at a lot of the questions as much as anybody else, but I also have to tell you that sometimes the dumb question gets the good answer. Sometimes the informed question leads to somebody nodding. Sometimes the so-called dumb question actually gets somebody talking. It's not a perfect world. So let's not pretend that shouldn't exist. Let's also never blame an athlete or a human being for protecting themselves if they are having anxiety or depression or if they just can't talk that day. We don't have to bash anybody for not doing that. It's okay. You know, maybe we'll get to a point where interviews aren't done right after a game, or maybe they're just certain number of people, or maybe it's more the Olympic style where it's a mixed zone where people walk through and you stop them, but they don't have to stop if they don't want to. I don't know what the final answer is, but understand that most sports teams want interviews to be done. Most athletes want interviews to be done. They might be picky about the circumstances. Most reporters have good intentions about trying to get good answers, whether they phrase the question right or well or not. This doesn't have to be a nuclear moment. Just let Osaka do her thing. Please get her back involved in these tournaments. We need to see her on the court. She's a great athlete and a great human being. Let's just not overreact to this on either end.
Parisi.
All right, I'll keep this brief. I wrote about this the other day, but in case you missed it, I know that, listen, I wanted Parisi traded a year or two ago. I saw where this is all headed. I didn't think this is going to work out very well, and I thought they'd be better off trying to get something for him while they could get something for him. I don't think they can get much for him at this point. So at this point, I really highly encourage Wild management to just find a way to mend the bridges enough that he can be a productive player for you. And maybe he needs a day off once in a while. Maybe he can't play 82 games. Maybe he can't play 4 games in a row. But he showed during the playoffs he has value. This team, this franchise, is not talented enough to turn away a talented player who knows how to play playoff-style hockey. So just fix it. Just have a meeting. Just grit your teeth. And if he's a little bit of a diva or if he's ticked you off, guess what? Pro sports, not everybody's going to be perfect. Not everybody's going to get along. Find a way to fix this.
And let's wrap things up with banned word of the day.
Yeah, I might. I don't know if I'm going to do this every week, but I am a media critic. I listen to press conferences. I watch the way people interact on social media, and a lot of it a lot of what I see from my business, my colleagues, my peers, drives me kind of crazy. Here's one: the word resilience. It's become the new kiss-ass word in local media, sometimes in national media, but you really see it in local media because the teams have financial deals with the local station that covers them. A lot of the people who are in local media are trying to appear as nice and as generous and as butt-kissing as possible in the hope that they can get along with the people they cover. I've never found that to really work all that well. I understand the motivation, but what that has led to is words like resilience being used all the time. These, you know, we're covering professional athletes. They have been competing their entire lives. They've played hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands of games, and they have competed on a daily basis in their entire lives. Showing up the day after a loss and trying to perform well is not resilience. winning the day after you lose a game is not resilience. It's called employment. It's showing up at your job. You just showed up. You showed up one day and things didn't go that great. You showed up the next day and they went a little better. That's not resilience. It's called having a job. Please stop kissing up to people and using words like resilience.
Resilience is the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties or toughness. Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it's really tough to go back to that job where they're paying you those millions of dollars and have those trainers to spring you back into shape.
Now, if you suffer two ACL tears one day and hit two home runs the next, I'll call you resilient. If you lose a game 3-1 on one day and win the game 3-1 on the next day because you're required to show up to your job and try to make an effort, that's not resilience. All right, let's get to one of my favorite guests. I've had him on other podcasts before. Kevin Seifert is one of the smartest, most thoughtful people in our business. So I'm not surprised that when I threw a bunch of topics at him in this interview, that he actually surprised me with some of his answers, including the one we'll start with about Aaron Rodgers. As promised, today's guest is Kevin Seifert, formerly of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, now with ESPN. Really interesting job at ESPN. He's a national reporter, covered with the NFL Nation. As ESPN says, he focused on league-level issues and analysis. He does a lot of interesting stuff on analytics, concussions, but he also keeps his fingers all over the more mainstream NFL news. So we're going to get into a lot of stuff with Kevin. Interesting background here. We both covered Major League Baseball. We both lived in the Baltimore, D.C. area, both had a connection to the Orioles. We both ended up covering the Minnesota Vikings for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. In fact, Kevin succeeded me on the beat when I started doing more feature stuff. I've known Kevin for a long time, haven't talked to him in a while. How is life, Kevin?
It's good. You left out the part where you put in a good word for me to get hired in the first place. So there's always... there's always moments in a person's life where... you can go one direction or the other, and moved to Minnesota, met my wife, had kids here. My parents even moved here. It's been, you're responsible for a lot of people's living right now.
I take no responsibility as usual.
Otherwise doing great. And ready for a little bit, I think, hopefully some NFL downtime here before training camp starts. And we'll be getting back to what appears to be pretty close to a normal type season after the pandemic.
Yes. And listen, Kevin and I could talk for hours about a lot of things, but on this show, I try to just get what I try to do with these interviews, as you probably discerned by now, is get a little bit off the beaten path, talk about some things that are interesting to me that might not be talked about everywhere else. But I admit I'm going to start here with the thing that everybody's talking about, because I know you've covered Aaron Rodgers. You've interviewed him. You've explained him to me at times in ways that I might not. Seriously, that you've shed light on his personality and his viewpoint in ways that I didn't really appreciate until you told me. So I have to ask you, because I just did the Jeff Diamond show, the former Vikings general manager. We talked through this stuff, and I've seen Rob Domofsky from ESPN is saying Aaron's never going to play for the Packers again. Andrew Brandt, the former Packer executive, thinks that Rodgers has at least one more year in the green and gold. What's your perspective on this whole thing?
I guess I can't say I'm totally surprised, because while I think at his core, Aaron is a good guy and a person who means well and wants is very invested in a positive legacy for himself. He also has very strong viewpoints about how he thinks things should go, how people should act as it relates to him and others. And as petty or as small of a deal as we might think it is that the Packers didn't give him a heads up that they were going to draft Jordan Love last year, I can see where that really rocked him. Just kind of knowing how he perceives the right and the wrong way to do things. So while I didn't necessarily think it would manifest itself in the way it has, I'm not surprised that he was offended enough by that, or reportedly offended enough by that, that it was sort of the last straw or the beginning of the end for him in a Packers uniform. I guess he's in Hawaii now, or was in Hawaii. Yep. For a while. And some people he was traveling with were were posting photos and that sort of thing. And he didn't look like a guy who was training to come back and play another, you know, a season at age 36 or whatever he is. I think he, I'm not making a prediction that he's going to retire or otherwise leave the game, but I also don't think that that's out of the realm of the possibility either. And something that we should all consider to really be his true leverage here. Not that he could engineer a trade somewhere, because that seems a little far-fetched right now, but that he, you know, if things are not the way he wants them and people are not acting the way he thinks they should act, I could see him, you know, just saying, all right, I'm done, you know, Ricky Williams style.
Well, that was my next question is, I mean, there's retirement to retire, and then there's retirement to get out of your contract and eventually come back under your own terms. You think it'd be more of a Ricky Williams go smoke dope in Australia kind of thing.
Yeah, whatever his version of that would be, I guess. But I could see it. Like, I think they both kind of have those that independent streak and not necessarily feeling bound to the football regimen as maybe some other people would. And maybe I'm overestimating what he's willing to do, but I guess I just think that should be real as much of a part of the conversation as where would he go? Would it be Denver? Would it be the 49ers? Would it be, you know, would he be swapped for Russell Wilson? Like, really, like, those possibilities, I guess, are possibilities, but we should talk about him walking away, I think, as much as any of the others.
Wow. That's fascinating, and it's something I had not really heard from many people. I'm glad you brought it up. You know, and let's, while we're on the NFC North here, you covered the Vikings for a long time. You keep an eye on the Vikings. Occasionally, you come cover a Vikings game at US Bank Stadium. What give me your you know, overall overview of where that franchise is, where that team is, in your view?
I think what stands out about the Vikings, especially when you're taking a bigger look at all the, or at least you consider the way many other teams operate, is just how stable they've been in terms of leadership, with Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer, and really thinking more broadly, the front office and the business side, been very few changes there really in the Wilf tenure as owners. And that's, you know, been more than a decade. And so, with that said, I feel like they're at a point where, and maybe we've thought in this and seen this, in previous years too, but really where it's not clear if their direction is in a rebuilding situation or if they were able to make enough repairs, to really challenge for the division title this year. And if they don't, how long, you know, cause nothing is forever. How long is Rick Spielman's leash? How long is Mike Zimmer's leash with the owners? And what would that mean for a franchise that really clearly doesn't like, turnover? And there's a lot to be said for that. You know, I look at it as a very, what could be a very revealing year for the short term and long term future of the football operations. I think, you know, as they're already kind of looking to the post Kirk Cousins era, is this going to be the leadership group that takes them there, or will they be replaced by someone else? And I don't know if that means this year or next year or 5 years from now, but it's interesting that they're kind of, as they were trying to trade up for Justin Fields and ultimately drafted Kellen Mond, that they're already kind of looking to that longer term. And the question for me is, who is going to be the one executing that longer term? Is it still going to be Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer, or is there going to be, will they not have enough success this year to merit that in the owner's eyes?
You recently wrote about something that it's been a pet theory of mine for a while, which is that we keep on talking about NFL Europe or team in London, you know, as if travel is never going to change. I kept on saying, you know, there was a time when we thought we were going to have supersonic transport and people are going to be basically ferrying back between Europe and the United States whenever they felt like it. That is the next step, isn't it? The next leap forward in travel speed, international overseas travel speed, could change the entire face of the league.
Well, that story actually that I tweeted out today actually was from like 6 years ago.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, because that was when we were really starting to wonder, like, is the NFL really serious about having an expansion team in London? Because every year they were adding more games there. And so they were getting to the point where it was four. And so you're basically talking about half of the home schedule. And like, could this really be done? And so I had this idea of like, what would be the logistical issues that they would have to face? And obviously the biggest one is getting teams over there, you know, and without totally disrupting it. And I had someone say almost offhand to me, but someone who's involved and say, this would be a much more interesting question if the Concorde was still around.
Right.
And so I called a guy at NASA. It was one of my favorite like random things I've ever written. I called a guy at NASA and said, you know, what's the state of supersonic flight in the world? And he said, it's funny you ask because there's all these new prototypes that are coming up, and given the way businesses, international business is conducted and the needs of tourists and all different kinds of things, they were asking Congress for money to subsidize it. And they were looking for ways to really shorten, you know, the distance between many international cities around the globe, including making New York to London a 3.5-hour flight. And if they could do that, and if you could say it takes as long to fly from Minneapolis to Seattle now as it would in a supersonic situation to go from New York to London, you could say, well, you know, maybe that removes one of the biggest logistical issues that that could be faced with an international expansion. And so I don't know. It sounds like the news on supersonic flight is that United is going to is signing a contract for development of a fleet of planes that would fly like probably closer to 2030. So we're not anywhere near that point, but it was interesting that actually turned out to be the case, that like there is a market apparently for supersonic flight. And if it wouldn't be the sole reason why somebody would develop it, but it could actually have an impact, not just for the NFL, I don't think, but a lot of pro sports, that if they're trying to develop international franchises.
Wow. That's interesting. I misread it. I thought that was a fairly fresh story. I remember reading it when it came out.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Hey, I know you spent a lot of time on officials and it's really interesting stuff. And I had this conversation with like some national guy who called me the other day to do a radio show, and he started complaining about calls in the Wild Vegas hockey series.
Okay.
And I kind of said, okay, yeah, we could pick apart each call. I said, but don't you just think that after, in all the ways we've seen developments and advances in sports, officiating is still, however you want to phrase it, either not very good or almost impossible to do well. And the adding the layer of technology that is replay, occasionally that it will correct a call. But just as often, we aren't sure if the replay decision is accurate even after waiting 5 minutes to hear from it. That's my view, at least. I'm interested in your view. Where are we with replay? Is it even worth having?
Yeah, I think pro sports, the NFL at the top of the list, is just in a really bad technological spot. And that is, whether they have replay or not, the broadcasters have the technology to show us things that officials on the field can't see. You know, whether it's slow motion or something really tight up, we can see if the ball touches the ground a lot easier sometimes than the officials on the field, or if the ball crossed the plane. And so the audience sitting at home drinking beer, you know, checking their fantasy, whatever, has a much better view than the guys who are, you know, the experts at keeping the game fair, and that make sure that the right team wins. And those are the officials. And so what do you do about that? Do you just write it off and say, you know what, you know, that's just the way it goes. You know, in the old days, those, the only difference between now and 20 years ago is that you can see it on their 4K broadcast. And it's not that officials have gotten worse or that players are so much faster. It's just that the technology is better. Or do you try to find a happy medium where you can use that technology in unobtrusive ways to sort of smooth that over? And it's especially important, I think, now that gambling has become such a mainstream part of the business of all the pro sports. They know they can make a lot of money getting involved in it. So if you have so many people having a financial stake in who succeeds in one play or another, who wins a game or another, or what have you, then you, in order to get those people, I think, to bet on it, you have to be, you know, selling a credible product. And if you watch a game on your couch on TV and see a play that was obviously an incomplete pass get ruled a complete pass because the official made a mistake and there's no way to fix that, then you've either, you know, you open yourself up to the game is fixed or that the game is so poorly administrated that I don't want to bet on it because the bet I make may not even become, you know, may not have a fair shot of being governed. And so I think that as the replay technology gets better, they're going to be able to, over a long period of time, they're going to be able to use it in less obtrusive ways. So we don't have to wait. And one small thing that they're going to do this year is they're going to take the broadcast directly from the truck and put it into the NFL's own cloud. So they can look at all the angles immediately on a multiple screen and not have to wait for the TV broadcaster to actually put it on the broadcast before they can evaluate it. And so that could take a little bit of time off. I've had people say that in the very long-term future, you could have an official with a digital armband where they could look at their arm and see a replay immediately off the cloud and be able to make a correction within seconds, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think, I don't see how they can avoid using replay to correct the obvious mistakes that would lead to questions about the credibility of outcomes of games. And I can only hope, and I think it's reasonable, a reasonable hope that the technology will continue to improve so that you can use it more quickly, more efficiently, and with minimal obtrusiveness. And I'm the first one to say, like, I watch college basketball and the NBA, and it's brutal to watch those the referees leaning over that screen on the, and it takes forever, and it's just to find out if one guy's finger touched it before another guy's finger, and that seems over the top. You know, I kind of like the way the NFL's idea of clear and obvious, even if they don't always execute it as well as they could. But I guess that's where I stand on it. You probably didn't want an answer quite that long, but that's where I stand. I think it's unavoidable in the current broadcast environment that they have to use technology to counter the technology that's in the broadcast itself.
I actually did want an answer that long. That's the beauty of doing a podcast is okay. We aren't in a rush. You know, we can actually talk through these things. So I actually appreciate that. Last topic for today, let's get together later in the summer and the NFL starts picking up a little bit more. Appreciate you coming on today. For last topic for today, the possibility of pro football in the spring, whether you want it, whether you think it will work.
I think there's a pretty good chance that somebody is going to be playing in the spring. I know the USF, the group that does the Spring League along with Fox Sports has reclaimed the USFL brand and wants to play next spring. We have no more details other than that, including the very important question of where the money would come from, because I don't think it's from Fox. And we also have the XFL, which was bought out of bankruptcy by The Rock and several other investors, Danny Garcia and Redbird Capital Partners, last spring, and they plan to come back next spring as well. So you have potentially two leagues in the U.S. alone, plus the CFL, if they survive the pandemic, which is not certain, playing football in 2022. And so I think there's a good chance that at least one of those groups will emerge to give us spring football if you like it, whether you want it or not. I think there's enough people out there that if you can keep costs down, it would be of interest to them. But we'll see. You know, the batting average for any professional sporting league in this country since the AFL-NFL merger, other than the NFL, is 0.0. You know, no one has ever succeeded at it, but clearly people are trying as hard now as ever. I think there's probably a pretty good chance that at least one of them will make it to next spring.
Here's something we could all bet on. Will Donald Trump kill the USFL for a second time?
This one doesn't seem as big enough potatoes for him. I could be wrong about the scope that they are planning. I guess it, without knowing where the money's coming from, I don't know how they can go get the Doug Flutie's and the Herschel Walkers and the Jim Kelly's of this generation.
Well, Herschel Walker's available right now.
He is, and he probably could bust some people up, is my guess.
He probably could.
He might have bigger plans. I guess he has some political ambitions in Georgia. But I don't. It's hard to imagine them having the money to put together a league that would have any kind of name players. I could be wrong, But, you know, even the XFL with Vince McMahon's money last year didn't really have a lot of name players. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be a reincarnation of the way the USFL operated and was and made Donald Trump interested in it at that time. But we shall see.
Aaron Rodgers is going to sign with the Appleton Appleseeds of the USFL.
Well, that's it'll be interesting to see if they keep some of the same names. Like I'm trying to remember the Chicago Blitz. Was that the XFL or was that the USFL? I can't remember.
I can't keep them straight.
I remember the Philadelphia Baltimore Stars, the Houston Gamblers, a few others maybe.
Good stuff, Kevin. Appreciate the time. As always, good to hear from you. Let's check back in with each other later in the summer.
Okay, Jim, thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir.